Hello, my name is Colm O'Regan, and welcome to another episode of The World Etc., a monthly podcast in association with Trokera, looking at topical issues facing people around the world. And today we return to another hot topic in more ways than one. It's dominated the news cycle, and it completely will for the foreseeable future. It's climate change. But we'll also touch on a few other interesting areas and try and look at climate change through a few different prisms. Joining me in the studio to do just that is broadcaster Keith Walsh, who's just back from a trip to Malawi, where he visited a number of projects funded by Trokera. Welcome, Keith.
Thank you very much, Colm. Thanks for having me.
You're just back from Malawi a couple of weeks. What are your feelings now, 2 weeks later, having visited and come back?
Well, I'm not feeling any happier. In fact, I'm probably a little bit more worried about the future. I mean, look, unless you're Donald Trump, you're aware that these things are happening. And, you know, it's fairly obvious. Ice is melting. The earth is getting hotter and people are suffering. And I suppose, unfortunately, it's not happening. It's not impacting maybe the places like London or Dublin or certain parts of America, like Washington. It's probably not impacting them just yet in the same way it's impacting sub-Saharan Africa and places like Bangladesh or whatever. So we don't really see, we kind of see it as a thing that's happening. It's far away. Yeah, it's terrible what's happening to the people over there. Maybe I can give some money to Trokera. They can help. And my conscience is clear now. I feel that if the powers of the world lived in Bangladesh, things might be different. Or in Malawi, things might be different, you know.
What was the purpose of your trip, in first and foremost?
So, I mean, I went over there because Trokera do a lot of work over there, and I've done some work with Trokera before, and we went to Palestine, and I said, is there anything I can get involved in? Obviously, the point of it is to use whatever clout you have in the media to try and let people know the work that's going on, say, this is happening, if you can help out, give Trokera some money, they're actually doing some good in Malawi in particular. So what happened in Malawi was a massive cyclone hit most of the country there, a large part of it. And it was pretty devastating. At one point, there was flooding and drought at the same time. And so Trokera were immediately, they were there anyway, so they were immediately on hand to sort of help in the immediate aftermath of the cyclone with whatever they needed. Because, you know, the crops were washed away, the topsoil was washed away, their houses were washed away. So what they got was, like, you know, plastic sheeting. They use a certain type of knife, it's like a machete for cutting down crops or just for building or whatever. It's a tool that they use all the time. Some seeds. And so they were given these packs by Trokera just to kind of get through the next little while. They were mostly living in school gyms before they returned to their homes when the flooding had moved on or had subsided. So Trokera were there. But 6 months on, we just went to see what else had happened and how their lives were and how they've been impacted by the cyclone and how they've sort of moved on since then in 6 months. And from going there and seeing, like, 6 months is a long time. It's amazing how much you can achieve when you're really under pressure, you know, to eat, you know.
What are your impressions of Malawi as a country? Did you know much about it? Were you learning on the hoof? Or did you go there with preconceptions?
No preconceptions. I'd been to Kenya before, and so I'd some experience of Africa. But Malawi is a different country, has its own problems, its own issues. I didn't know much about it. When I knew I was going, I kind of tried to look up, you know, a bit about the history, and I was struck by how similar to Ireland Malawi was. And I got talking to some of the locals there, and what struck me was Malawi seems like, and this isn't a doomsday statement I'm making, but it seems like, I wasn't there at the time, I know I'm old, but I wasn't there at the time, but it seems like a bit like Ireland just before the 40s, 1840s, just before the famine. Massive population. They're farming small patches of land and they're trying to live off the crop that bit of land gives, you know, the potatoes in our case, the maize in Malawi. Very similar. The Brits in Malawi had gone to Malawi and taken over large parts of Malawi and still do and still live there. And they kind of run the tea farms over there, whatever tea farms are called over there. But a lot of similarities. What struck me was that maybe if in 1843 or whatever, when the crops started failing, if somebody had come over like Trokera and came up to Irish farmers and said, look, that's not working anymore for you. Like, that's bad. You're just growing potatoes. That's not going to work. You've got the odd pig as well. But, you know, ultimately, you're doomed. A lot of people say that's what the British wanted to happen. So, you know, they weren't going to do anything about it. But if someone had come in and said, look, what if you tried growing these crops as well? So you've got a backup plan. You know what I mean? And if the potatoes go, then you can always go to this, you know, whatever. I think that the Black 47 might have been different. I went as far as thinking about who we are now, like sitting at desks doing podcasts, working in Google, and being very tech savvy as a country. It might have been totally different because I don't think we were necessarily unhappy as small farmers,
yeah,
tending to our potatoes and having a few cows and a few sheep and just kind of hanging out and being fairly laid back and procreating.
Yeah.
I don't know how far we would have got with the population, but you know, when you look at the Malawians, they don't want somebody to come over and say, listen, what you need to do is like build a little town like Newbridge in County Kildare and live in a semi-D and get yourself a car and get a house. They want to live the way they're living. And that's the great thing about trokers. They're just trying to enable them to keep going, to keep living the life they're living.
It's interesting that you say that because I presume something like, you know, basic strategic development goals just cover the kind of stuff, you know, that makes us mostly happy. And then anything after that is very marginal. So you're talking about, you know, healthcare, basic food security and access to information or education. Did you see when you were there the kind of things, the little things that don't make the headlines that make a huge difference? Is that the kind of impression you get coming back, that small steps for individual people make a lot of difference?
Yeah. Like if I want to grow sweet potatoes in my garden, I'll just go and open my laptop and go, sweet potatoes in garden. The information will come up and I'll just grow a few sweet potatoes in my garden. These people don't know. They don't know that why their goats are getting sick, right? So somebody comes in and says, look, your goats are getting sick because they're down on the ground and it's too damp. When it's damp, they'll get the dust and the dampness or whatever get into their lungs and then they're going to die. So if you put your goats into a pen, but it's lifted off the ground, that won't happen to them. So your goats will last longer. Also, the droppings from the goats will land on the ground. You'll have to sweep them out and use them as manure. And so these are the things that they've been learning, even just in the last 6 months. So I was talking to farmers and they're going, and it's mostly the women actually doing the farming. And they were going, yeah, we have a compost heap. We put the goat manure into the compost heap. The goats are fine. They're thriving. We've got like more goats than we ever had. And also the compost is helping with the crops. So we've got more crops. We're not just growing maize anymore. Now we're growing sweet potatoes. We're growing like the Chinese cabbage. They had all these different, there's a variety of stuff. So if one thing fails, they've got other stuff. And it was just all this stuff that I would take for granted or I could find out on the internet that they just didn't know. So, you know, that it's a helplessness. They've been doing things a certain way for so long and that's all they know. And it's just great to see someone coming in and giving them a few little tips to enable them to keep going the way they're going and to keep living the life they're living. And now they're growing crops. They're able to sell goats. They're able to sell some of the crops, keep some for food. And now you see them sort of, now they're able to sort of rebuild a house or send a kid to school, you know, so you can see how, you know, and they're like Troker isn't going, I think some people might have an impression of any NGO or any sort of charity going over, there's not a truck that turns up at a village.
The Jeep, the white Jeep.
Yeah, but they're not handing out their breakfast, lunch and dinner. And that's not what they want either. They don't want to be given food. They want to work. Like it's like you've been to Malawi.
That's right, yeah.
What time do these people get up at?
Yeah, and the commute they have. They walk for miles to get to whatever the job might be. My impression was needing to help themselves was the most important thing. It's what we all want. Nobody wants to feel helpless.
No, but I don't know what time. Like we were up early to go and visit these villages. They were all up before us.
That's right, yeah.
And they're walking and they're cycling and they're going. Like they're mad. I was saying they're mad for road.
Yeah.
Because they are so industrious.
I felt like at 6 o'clock in the morning, the amount of people walking on the road, you felt like you were going to a match in Croke Park and traffic had been closed down.
Yeah.
And bicycle ability, like there could be four people on a bicycle. There could be a man with like three children on the back and his wife on the front, and the most economic use of resources. Yeah. And this is probably brings us to, you know, what's going on at the moment. That the neck of us, in some ways, when we talk about climate change and oh, the environmental issues in out in sub-Saharan Africa, and they are using like a gram of carbon to do so much compared to what we do, even sitting here putting this podcast into the cloud.
Yeah.
It does. I felt in going there, just the efficiency of life there, and as you say, a couple of tweaks, and a lot can be done.
Yeah. And like speaking of bikes, like one of the guys, we went to a plantation and they were growing maize. And with the help of Troker, they'd gotten these pumps that allowed them, instead of taking the water out of the river bucket by bucket, so you're taking a bucket, you're walking whatever it is, half a kilometre, if, you know, 500, 400, 300 metres, pouring the bucket, going back to get another bucket, they'd put these pumps in so they could just, they all had their own hoses, and the hoses are very precious, so they bring the hose home with them every night and they bring it back out and they really mind these hoses. And the hose just helps them obviously water the maize. So they're now double harvesting every year. And one guy with his harvest last year was able to buy a bike. And this was like, it was a really nice bike actually, by the way. It was very cool, very kind of, I did accuse him of being a bit of a hipster. I don't know if they have hipsters in Malawi, but it was a very cool bike. He was so proud of it.
No gears and very skinny frame.
tiny handlebars. But he was so proud of it, and he was going to get so much out of that. He was telling me like what he'd be able to do, you know, even down to like, he was saying, even if my daughter gets sick now, I can bring her to the hospital. And I said, would you loan that now to people if they wanted to loan your bike? Would you be precious? And he said, no, I loan it to people all the time because, you know, someone else's son might be sick. They might need to get to the hospital, or someone might need to get something, or I'll carry somebody. So they were getting so much use out of this bicycle. It meant so much to them. And he had saved up enough. And I think it worked out about €170 for the bike. But it was just the pride. And that's, it comes back to, and I'm not being patronized. Like, it just comes back to, they want to work, they want to earn their own money. They're happy to grow their crops, and they'll work hard. And then, you know, they'll do, if they get a bit of money, they'll do good with it. You know,
what is the resilience like? For example, you know, in Bangladesh now, they have far less people die because they have warning systems, all that kind of thing. How is Malawi getting on with the with the preparation for disaster or response to it?
They're not great at the moment, but I know it's something that is on the horizon and will happen. But what they are good at is now when they're building their houses, they're lifting them up off the ground a little bit, or and they have sort of like, if this happens, they're learning from it because it's happening more. It used to happen. I mean, it does happen, and they were used to like, they've got paddy fields, so they're used to flooding, and they're used to using the water. So, you know, but it's just getting worse. And when when it's a case that your house is just washed away, then you have to start rethinking. So maybe the bricks they use aren't right, you know, where they were situated. They are encouraging people to sort of move up the mountain a little bit as well, and not be, the problem there is that because they're using paddy fields, because some of them are fishermen, they want to be down there, they want to be in a sort of a, like what, you know, part of the, it's almost like where I was, there was an area which was kind of like, it was a place called Zumba, but it's like a swamplands. It's not quite Everglades, but you know, and it was, while I was there, it was dried up, but it dried up so much and it had gone right back to the lake. And they were telling me that the year before last, the lake completely dried up.
Yeah.
So you're driving through this dust bowl and you're just looking at these houses and you see like a boat beside a house. And we were like, I was going, why are there boats? What's the boat doing there? And they were, oh, they're fishermen. I was like, where are they fishing? Oh, yeah, well, just like a few kilometres away, there's a lake. And then you get to a few kilometres away and the lake is receded so much that it's not much of a lake anymore. So these things that are happening, and they just need to rethink it. So now the fishermen don't have the fish to either eat, and they used to sell them as well. So they need to rethink it. So fishermen now are growing crops as well. So they're not just fishing, they're not depending on one thing. And also, when it's a very clever thing, when the lake recedes, farmers, householders will use the damp ground of the lake bed to grow their crops, and nobody owns that land, so they can just go in and they know they have a frame or a window of opportunity to go in, grow some crops, have them harvested before the rains come and before the lake fills up again. So they are very clever.
The whole practice, and it's an important thing, you know, somebody going out to bear witness to work that's going on and coming back, telling the story, trying to raise a bit of money. It's good intentions, it can be very helpful, but also people, I think, more aware now of the white saviour kind of feeling. How have you changed how you think about what you've seen, how you communicate it? Is it a challenge to get the balance right without that feeling of, you know, look at us helping all around us, aren't we great? Is it a hard one to get right when you're trying to communicate it?
I had that conversation with a few people before I went down and said, because it's very zeitgeisty, or it's very in the, people are talking about this white saviour thing, you know, and I was thinking, I don't want to be that guy going out and then coming back and saying, you know, I'm helping the poor black people, you know, because that's not what's happening and that's not what you're doing. And it's like, but you're almost kind of thinking, like, maybe I shouldn't go. Because there's that whole thing of, how are you helping?
And throw in the new one of, I'm flying there to come back and report on climate change, where's the return on investment on that? It's a really complicated kind of thought process, isn't it?
And the amount of people that asked me when I came back, well, how many flights did you get home? And you know, but just like friends just slagging you, you know. But the thing about it is, like, what Troker do is ask the locals what they want. No one's imposing anything on them. So it's that kind of thing. Like, you go over and you say, well, what are you looking for? What's happening? What are the problems? How has the weather here changed in the last 5 years? And you come back and try and tell people, you know, the whole climate change thing, it is real. Like, you have to, you know, and you can be one more voice saying, you know, this is happening to these people. I've seen it with my own eyes. I didn't go over there to save anybody. I went over there as a fact finder to sort of come back and go, this has definitely happened, guys. It's kind of like, there's definitely a problem at the moment because we're all ready to jump on somebody who's doing anything, right? So anybody who, it's almost worse now. I mean, Ireland was a great country for dragging down someone who lifted their head up a little bit above the parapet. It's almost getting worse now with social media. So much so that if somebody likes something or shares a post on Facebook about something terrible that's happening in the world, other people will take them down.
Virtue signalling as an insult, when in fact, it's not the worst thing in the world to say, I've done what I hope is a useful thing.
I'm sharing this terrible thing that happened in the hope that other people will see it, and then that they'll realize that's a terrible thing that's happened, and then that might change your mind. I think you have to be very careful in how you relay the news as to what's going on in places like Malawi when you come back. But I'm not worried about what people think of me. So that helps. If you're going out there and you're worried about your image, you probably shouldn't go, you know.
You probably encountered, because Greta is, it's amazing what she's done. She's used wherever, you know, her own, where she's from. She's created a snowball effect. But you probably encountered Malawian Gretas, maybe some same age, some older, working in their own areas, being just as campaigning, didn't you? Because the world is full of people like Greta, isn't it?
Yeah, because we met lots of people, but we met a group of young people who were out of school. But they were, I mean, they can leave school quite early. So they were out of school. Some of them had kids. Some of them were married. But they were coming back to their old school and they were meeting every week. And they kind of had these older, you know, 20-year-old, 30-year-olds, people sort of like, it was just a discussion group. So they'd sort of work through problems that they were having in their lives. And obviously when you get a group of people, the same problems come up again and again. So they were trying to work through how they could manage these problems for themselves and how that then they could help other people deal with these problems and maybe make a change, be the generation that makes a change in Malawi. And that seems that group that I met were like that. So they were looking at things like the problems with gender in Malawi, which is a massive problem because women are seen as sort of pieces of property, I suppose, second class citizens. But also they do all the work. And the problem at the moment is I'd imagine originally the man was the hunter and the woman was the, you know, hang around looking after the kids, but also looking after gathering the food and growing the crops or whatever, close to the house. Well, he went out and got the big bits like the meat and that kind of stuff. So the men seem to be still in that role, but they're not out hunting. So they're kind of a bit lost.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the woman is still doing all the work and the men aren't sort of chipping in. That's a generalisation, but that's, you know, that'll be a large part of it.
So the kind of projects that Troker is involved in, does that have to be, you know, acknowledging the culture, acknowledging the huge weight of history, the historical imbalances against women, you know, domestic violence and the way they're treated? What have you noticed about how they try and change hearts and minds?
The young people, yeah. Well, what they're doing is, so say for instance we've got like the Me Too thing here, or what you'll see a lot on social media in Ireland especially is you'll see sort of women and men or whatever, but certainly on Twitter, I read a lot of it or hear a lot of it, people saying, if you're the guy and you're out in the group and the other guys are, you know, and the girl walks into the bar and the other guys are saying this, that and the other, you know, wolf whistling or whatever they're saying about her, be the guy that stands up and says, hang on a second, that's not on. They're doing that, but it's on a different scale because, you know, sexual assault is very high and these people are being taught their rights. These women are being taught their rights. So the women in the group are being taught the rights. No, you don't have to. They're also being taught a bit of self-defense as well. How to say no, that you can say no. You don't have to accept it. And they're talking to the men about how to tell your male friends that that's not on as well. And also if you're out and you see something happen to a female, whether it's your friend or another man, you need to stand up for that female. So it's that kind of thing. I mean, it's small steps at the moment, but you have to start somewhere. And it's great to see, like, this generation, they're very powerful people and they're very well spoken and they're very well able to get their point across and they're interested in change. And some of them are actually going to some of the tribal leaders in their community and saying, look, this is you can't be letting you can't be letting the men in this community send their daughters off to be married when they're this age. That's actually illegal. Some of the chiefs are sort of are open to it. Some of them are quite angry and won't listen to this. But it's that kind of stuff that they're doing. And it's just, I mean, it's amazing to see it. But it's not a patronising thing. They're just, this is what they're doing, you know, and they're well able to do it, you know.
That sounds like another example of how we, I think, here need to change the way we think about countries in Africa. For a start, we stop calling it Africa as if it's, like, there's 56 countries there that are as different from each other as Ireland is from Russia or as Ireland is from China. But that acknowledging that often the good news or the tiny steps that are being taken don't make the headlines, they don't make the news. It's, and I use this in the most polite or praiseworthy way ever, it's boring stuff. Like the solutions all is, they have to be boring, don't they? Because if they're dramatic, they won't last.
Yeah. Because the dramatic things are the things that happen sort of straight away, or the Live Aid stuff or whatever. And it's sexy and it's cool and everybody wants to get involved. But it's the stuff that people are doing day to day with young people and changing young people's minds. And then it's kind of, and then it's word of mouth and it's slow and it's trickly, but it is effective. And when you know young people, and like we've all been young people, but when we know about something, when we get some information about something, and we know that it will make our life better and the lives of the people around us better, and we can affect the next generation and the lives of our children yet to come, we're happy to use that information. We're happy to get involved. You know, we're good like that. You know, people are good like that.
When you see young people in Malawi taking on like such a hard thing to stop something like domestic violence, being having that bravery, and you know, within a week, you were seeing people marching in Dublin, young people. Probably it's easier, you know, to do it, but still it requires a bit of impetus. And even just today, I passed a much smaller climate change march outside the Dáil. Mm. I felt like they were, it's like in GA parlance, this is where the championship is won, lads. Like the people who are outside after the big one, and the weather isn't as good, you know, it's a showery day, but the people, These are the people who are good in the league and the championship kind of thing. Do you feel inspired by the people you saw in Malawi, the people you saw here, and also more encouraged to tell people to go and, as young people and their allies, do something about the likes of climate change, but also anything like housing or anything like that? Does it make you more campaign-y when you come back from somewhere like Malawi and you see people with big struggles and chipping away at it in their own way?
I don't know if it makes me more campaign-y, but it makes me more willing to help to try and support things like the Friday school strikes or whatever, and to be more encouraging of young people and to be that 40-something-year-old man that isn't sort of having a go at them, and be the man that's saying, no, hang on a second, you're wrong here.
Like the least you could do is shut up about giving out about young people marching, isn't it?
It's such an obvious white male thing to do, and you're just so obvious. So just shut up, listen to yourself, you know? It's like somebody on Twitter said, if the strikes are on the summer holidays, I'd love to see who... And you're like, the point of it is, it's a school strike. It can't be on the summer holidays. Who's going to strike from, you know, if you're being mistreated in work, you're not going to go strike on a Sunday when you don't work. You strike the days that will affect the business.
Yeah.
They're going on strike to tell the adults that they're not going to go to school on Fridays unless they do something about what's happening to the world. That's the point of it. And for stupid white 40, 50 year old, 60 year old men to be missing, like, unfortunately for young people, they didn't take into consideration how thick the men are, you know, and the generation before us are. And that's the problem. They're so thick that I feel almost like it doesn't matter what they'll do, it's not going to get through because they have all the excuses, they turn a blind eye, they have their blinkers on, and they'll come up with a reason not to, you know, not to listen. And that seems to be a problem. So I like, yeah, maybe I'm more campaigning, maybe I feel like I need to speak up more and I'm trying to speak up more, but I think that unless, you know, we get, it's you know, it's the problem with Trump and it's the problem with there's so much stupid stuff going on that doesn't need to be going on, like, and it just deflects from things that we actually need to be doing right now, you know. It just seems so, they're just playing silly beggars, you know.
Going back to Malawi, it's obviously more real for you, and obviously you'd been to Kenya before, and I know you'd been to Palestine before, but having been to a country and seeing what are the small things that make the big things, both politically or climate-wise or farming-wise, that now when you hear a headline about Africa, you go, no, now I've actually not just let it wash over me, find out what's really happening.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would always sort of try and look beyond the headlines as well. And I would definitely be more interested in Africa as a continent now than I was, and probably a little bit more willing to, I suppose, like, it's a mind change as well that you have to, I'd almost started to buy into that whole, the thing we mentioned earlier about white savior, and, you know, and going, yeah, no, we just need to leave them, you know, do, like, if, you know, if the dictator isn't, if they've got a bad leader, well, you know, there's not much we can do, we just need to let them sort out their own stuff,
and let the market fix it.
Yeah, us going in there and you know sort of sticking our oar in isn't actually going to help, it's going to make things worse, you know. And you start believing that, you start thinking maybe that's the truth, you know. But I think that's wrong, and I think that we need to, and there's the other thing as well of, well, you know, charity starts at home, and we need to look after our own first. And
it's I always find that people who say we need to look after our own first aren't looking after our own either.
No.
That's not a rigorous statistical analysis. It's just a kind of a what I've seen empirically. But
yeah,
you do get that feeling.
It is possible to look after your own and other people at the same time. You know, it's not, they're not mutually exclusive. You know,
yeah. Like, if you can look after your own children, but possibly stop another child from crossing the road as well. You know, it's
what a perfect analogy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know,
everybody thinks they're always the trolley bus driver, like, which it's never happened. Oh, you have to swerve towards the five people over here or the one person over here. That, you know, like, that's only happened in Philosophy and The Good Place. I've never seen it, you know, so.
There is a way where you can try and help everybody or as many people as you can, and we shouldn't. And that's another thing about the anger that seems to be going on at the moment, just getting angry at people for doing things, whatever it is. You know, it's like the RNLI over in the UK and you know, it suddenly emerged that 3% of their work was helping people who were drowning in the sea between Africa and Europe and saving some of those people. And the anger in the UK, I was absolutely, I mean, I knew there was a lot of stupid, angry people in England. And I know we have our fair share here, but I was in shock at just how angry these people were at this organisation that were pulling humans out of the sea. It's just, you know, I don't know. It's just the anger. It's just, it's crazy, you know. Like, the reason I'll do this or do if a radio show or a TV show asks me on at the moment, I just want to say to people, look, there are problems in the world, and we can help, and we can help because Troker know what to do, and other organisations, they know what to do. They're there. They're talking to the people. As I said earlier, they're not handing out food to them. They're just going over there and saying, what do you need right now, and what do you need for the future, and we'll figure it out, and we'll come back with the information, and then we let you off. That's what they're doing. So we can help. I just want to tell people that if you give some money to Trokra, don't think of it as helping your conscience or offsetting your carbon footprint or making yourself feel better. like, think of it as you can genuinely do something. It's a you're genuinely helping. And I think the problem with, you know, charities in recent years, they've gotten a bad press because of certain organisations and people are reluctant. But this is it's probably a separate conversation than the bigger climate change conversation and, you know, what you need to do with regards to your rubbish and all that. This is just, let's help the people who are being affected by the climate change right now first. Like, in 1847, when Ireland was in the throes of the worst part of the famine, there was a group of Choctaw Indians in America who found out about it. Now, these people had their own problems and they weren't being treated very nicely in their own country at the time. But they, Native American Indians, they've heard about Ireland and they've raised some money. Like, I don't know what it was. I think it might have been a couple of hundred pounds or whatever it was. But they sent money over to help the Irish during the famine. Now, there was nobody in America going, those goddamn Native American Indians with their, you know, virtue signalling, you know.
I wonder where their Choctaws going, we should look after our own first. There probably was. I'm sure there's some of them in every tribe.
There probably was. Yeah. But if you think about it that way, if you can think about it that way, this is like we're just overthinking everything now, you know, and we have to have an opinion on everything. You don't have to have an opinion on it. You just need to have a bit of compassion and go, look, there's someone over there who needs a bit of help. I'm going to help them. There's no, it's not like, oh, am I virtue signaling? Is it a white savior? Is it just, no, it's human to human. Forget about the race. Forget about whatever. It's Choctaw Indians helping starving Irish. Someone did it for us. Let's do it for somebody else.
And if you don't want a virtue signal, just don't tell anyone you're doing it.
Just don't tell anyone you're doing it. Exactly. Yeah, perfect. But I just think that for me is a perfect example of, you know, if you're worried, don't worry. Just do it, you know.
That seems like a good place to leave it. Thank you very much, Keith. You were listening to The World Etc., a monthly podcast, which you can subscribe to on all the usual channels, Spotify, iTunes, Acast, or Acast, as I've called it myself from time to time, Radio Public and Audio Boom. So please do give us a follow. Thanks once again to broadcaster Keith Walsh for joining me today, and I look forward to speaking to you all next time. Sweet desire.